की जाए। गौर प्रेमानंदी हरि हरि। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। What verse is that? 15. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 13, Text Number 15. Shri Urva Uvacha, Yadatvam Sanakadhibhyo, Indarupena Keshava, Yogam Adishtavam Etad Rupam Ichchami Veditam Shri Urva Uvacha Itatvam Sanakadhibhyo Jena Rupinda Keshava Yogam Adishtavam Etad Rupam Ichchami Veditam Shri Urva Uvacha Yadatvam Sanakadhibhyo Jina Rupena Keshava Yogam Adishtavam Etad Rupam Ichchami Veditam. Shri Urva Uvacha. Shri Urva said, Yada, when, Tvam, you, Sanaka Adhibhya, to Sanak, etc. Jena, by which, Rupena, form, Keshava, Madhi Keshava, Jogham, the process of fixing the mind in the Absolute Truth, Adishtavan, you have instructed, Etat, that, Rupam, form, Ichchami, I desire, Veditam, to know. Translation. Sri Uddhava said, My dear Keshava, at what time and in what form did you instruct the science of yoga to Sanak and his brothers? I now desire to know about these things. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Putra Haranya Garbhasya Manasya Sanakalaya Prapachhu Pitaram Sukshmam Yogas Yaikandikam Gatim. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Once the mental sons of Lord Brahma, namely the sages headed by Sanak, inquired from their father about the difficult subject matter of the supreme goal of yoga. Sanakadaya uchu gunesh bhavisate chitto gunas chitasi cha prabho yatam anyanya satyago mumuksho ati tirisho. The sages headed by Sanaka said, O Lord, people's minds are naturally attracted to material sense objects. And similarly, the sense objects in the form of desire enter within the mind. Therefore, how can a person who desires liberation, who desires to cross over activities of sense gratification destroy this mutual relationship between the sense objects and the mind. Please explain this to us. Purport. As described above, as long as one is a conditioned soul, the modes of material nature, manifested in the form of sense objects, constantly disturb the mind, and by their harassment, one is deprived of the actual perfection of life. So here, Uddhava is asking Lord Krishna, who he is addressing as Keshava, Keshava, there are different meanings to the word Keshava. One, of course, is that Lord Krishna is Keshava, means that he is the controller of Brahma and Shiva. As we know, the modes of material nature are conducted or managed by the three deities of Vishnu, Brahma and Shiva. But Lord Krishna is Keshava, so he's the controller of all those powerful forms of the Lord. So it's very... here, of course, Lord Krishna is describing how one can fix one's mind upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the science of yoga. And that is a very, very difficult science because generally people are unable to control the mind. They're under the control of the modes of material nature. And therefore, sense gratification forcefully, in one sense, takes place within their mind. And therefore, they cannot really prosecute yoga very well. But Krishna is the Lord of all things and all people. And he is the controller of everything. So he knows... because he is controlling all the demigods, all the modes of material nature, if one can please Lord Keshava, then one can be free from the control of the modes of material nature, one can be free from the control of the demigods, which are, you know, harassing the living entities through the material energy. So he's addressing the Lord here as Keshava. He says, at what time and in what form did you instruct the science of yoga to Sanaka and his brothers? I now desire to know all these things. So then Krishna begins to answer how once the mental sons of Lord Brahma, the sages headed by Sanaka, inquired from their father about the same difficult subject matter of yoga, and they made the inquiry that it seems almost impossible to stop the process of sense gratification within the mind and therefore within the activities. Therefore, how can we really attain liberation? And so here we see that Uddhava is asking Krishna a very, very nice question, and we see also the sages headed by Sanaka, they're also asking Lord Brahma a very, very nice question. We see that that is a sign of intelligence. when a person can ask, they become, you know, inquisitive. It's always a good thing. It's always a glorious thing. And Prabhupada tells the story how there was a young boy, and when he heard a madanga playing, he was thinking, you know, what's inside that madanga that, you know, when it makes that sound when you tap it, but the boom boom, you know, makes a sound. So when no one was watching, he cut open, smashed open that madanga to see, you know, what was inside. So Prabhupada was explaining how, you know, that's a good thing. Although, you know, we shouldn't smash open madangas. You know, one of his Prabhupada's disciples is asking, so, you know, Prabhupada, you know, couldn't really be a good thing. He's destroyed a madanga. And Prabhupada said, you can always get another madanga. You can always purchase another madanga. But this inquisitive nature has to be, you know, one who asks questions and inquires into things, that's a really very rare and wonderful asset. And that should always be glorified, even if there is some, you know, little, you know, inconveniences or side effects to it. It's a very wonderful thing. So it's an unusual story to sort of illustrate that. we know with children, children tend to ask, you know, many questions, and especially sometimes for adults, you know, it can be quite embarrassing. Again, Prabhupada tells the story of a little, one of the devotee children, you know, it's probably just, you know, maybe about 5 years old. And I think they were in India, and they were at the temple somewhere, or near the temple, and the little child saw someone who, although, you know, apparently dressed like a devotee and what have you, smoking a cigarette. So, you know, the child automatically asked, you know, why are you smoking a cigarette? Was it? I think it was. And the man's, you know, of course, so it's, you know, normally, you know, people get so entrenched in bad habits and doing things that, you know, there's some justification for it going on in their minds. And we get so accustomed to cheating other people and lying to people. But when a little child asks the question, and you know, I can't lie to this child, I have to tell them the truth, you know. I can lie my way to, you know, all the adults and so, but here's an innocent child, I actually have to tell her the truth, you know, that you know, this is not a very good thing, and I will give it up. I will give, don't worry, I'll give it up, that is. So you know, we have that, adults quite often have that, I know with my children, you know, with their, you know, grandparents and what have you, and they'll see them eating meat, and they'll just say, you know, why are you eating that? That, you know, is that a dead chicken? You know, you know, they'll just, you know, straight out, and it becomes very difficult to answer, but. You know, that the nature of questions, you know, the nature of children, to be inquisitive and to ask questions is a very good thing, even though the adults may feel that I don't like that question. And therefore, what happens with many children, of course, as they're growing up, is that, you know, the adults, especially throughout the world now, everyone is engaged in horrible activities. You know, they're taking drugs, they're gambling, they're having illicit sex, they're doing this, they're doing that. And, you know, so many horrible things. And children ask them, but they don't want to tell them, you know. You know, where were you, Dad? I'm not going to tell you that I've spent, you know, the week's wages down at the pokies, and that's why you won't be eating dinner tonight. I was at work. You know. But therefore, they, you know, a lot of adults get into the habit of, you know, don't ask so many questions. As if, you know, and even as children go to school, even right through to university, my daughter, who is going to university out near Geelong, and she came, she was having difficulty with some assignments that were to do with social work and what have you. So she asked me if I could, you know, help her. So I gave her a few responses as to, you know, because giving the Vedic perspective on how we can really fix some of the problems, at the same time trying to present it in such a way that, you know, it's logical and reasonable that it could be put in an essay or like that. Anyway, when she was at, went back to her classes, and the teacher was speaking some dogma, she questioned him. She's, you know, that that doesn't seem to be right. That, you know, logically it would be more like this. Now, instead of taking up the question with, like, you know, a, you know, here's an adult who's come to learn and paying a lot of money for it, at least I was, and he was offended. The teacher was actually offended, you know, don't ask questions like that. You know, this is a standard answer. And, you know, don't question the foundation of, you know, my knowledge and, you know, Western thought with those silly questions, you know. So it literally tried to intimidate her and bully her into just being quiet and just listen along with everyone else and just take notes and do it, you know, like that. So, you know, so right throughout life, actually, people are, pushed away, or what's the word? Diverted, another word I'm looking for. Discouraged, what a wonderful word. Discouraged from answering questions. So, you know, if people ask, you know, is it just normal that we're all going to die? can I, you know, stop? There was a pantomime many years ago called "Stop the World, I Want to Get Off." Did anyone ever see that? No. This he was like Marcel Marceau who did that. It might have even been him. He does a silent mime, so they act everything out, but there's no sound, and they just, you know. So he did this one-man play, and it was literally the life of the average person. But every now and then, he would just stop, and he would speak, and he'd say, stop the world, I want to get off. And basically it was these problems of birth and death and old age and disease. We are taught, don't question your mortality. Psychiatry, which is a huge, it's a very popular subject for many students these days, they teach that basically you just have to accept. You know, don't try and transcend. Don't turn to religion and try and, get out of the material world. Don't even ask that question. Can I stop death? Don't ask that question. It's a ridiculous question. You just accept. No, you're going to die. You're going to get old. You're going to get disease. And just learn to deal with it. That's, if you ask those questions, you're considered to be a little bit something wrong with you. And I remember, as a teenager, there were many questions like that that used to go through my head. And, I'd be thinking, is there any purpose to, all this sort of nonsense that we all sort of do? We sort of follow like sheep, even though, we know that we're not happy doing what we're doing, but we have to follow. You want to question, you want to look for something, wonderful, transcendental, eternal life. But everyone is pushing you. Don't be so weird. Do your schoolwork and straighten your tie and, put your socks up. And get a haircut and get a job. So, society, the scientists also, we live in a world where, if you question the fact that the scientists, why are we following these guys? Are they not the biggest, pack of cheating, foolish rascals that anyone has ever seen? Why are we following these people? If you can't question like that. You just have to, accept. So, but factually, if we ask the proper questions, it is a good thing. So we should, never be intimidated. Basically, if you look at society throughout the world, there are so many contradictions and irrational activities going on. Completely irrational, completely contradictory. They will, the scientists claim, we're trying to create life. So, we're cloning and doing this. So then you ask the question, so that is your goal. You like to create life. Oh, yes. And therefore, you pay us billions of dollars, because we want to create. So then why are you killing billions and billions of children? Why is your technology being used to kill billions of children within the womb? Why is your technology being used to slaughter so many innocent animals? What is the country, are you into killing or, creating life? So, actually, if you look at all the activities, they're completely contradictory. and irrational, the only rational answer as to why things go on as they are is because people who are completely attached to sense gratification to get as much money and power as they can, right, so that a few people in this world can try to enjoy as much as they can because their desires are so lusty, so greedy, so envious. So those few people, this is Western society, those few people want to, you know, everyone else can suffer in scarcity. That is the reason, is the underlying principle of science, education, politics, religion, and economic development. That drive for sense gratification by a few. Vedic culture is the exact opposite. That you ask the question, I want to be happy, where is happiness? Is there happiness in sense gratification? And the Vedas will tell you, no. Because the senses are limited, the senses are temporary, apart from the fact you're not even that body. You're a spirit soul. If you try to find happiness in the process of sense gratification, you will always be disappointed and you'll never be happy. So therefore, Vedic society means that they see everything as the property of the Lord to be utilized in the service of the Lord for the benefit of all living entities. Vedic society means they want everyone to be happy. Not just humans, the birds, the trees, the insects, all living entities. That's Vedic society. Vedic society is that we will just accept enough to maintain body and soul together. We will engage in the service of the Lord, and we utilize everything to teach people not to take up the process of sense gratification, but to take up the process of bhakti yoga, and then everyone will be happy. So that makes sense. But our modern civilization, which is, you know, turn us back on God, it's different. So one or two people will try and be happy at the expense of all other living entities. And that is always the result of sense gratification. The result of sense gratification is that someone always has to suffer. The very nature of sense gratification causes other living entities to suffer, whereas the very nature of service to God creates auspiciousness for all living entities. So you know, it is a good thing to question. And here, of course, they're asking the question that how can we stop? Because, you know, this process of sense gratification, it is so powerful. Right? And we see that, you know, in all species of life, you know, they're all just all the animals, you know, they're just attached to the objects. You know, a dog is chewing on a bone, chewing, thinking, you know, there's somewhere in there, there's happiness, chewing, you know. And, you know, all the animals, all people, they're engaged in sense gratification, you know, looking for happiness, and yet everyone is suffering. And the modes of material nature are so powerful because they're actually controlled by the Supreme Lord, who's control of Brahma and Shiva. No one can stop the process of sense gratification without actually taking shelter of the Lord, who is the controller of the material energy. It is not possible to be become liberated from the process of sense gratification. And sense gratification means as soon as we try to enjoy the material energy, we'll become victimized or harassed. So, the Vedas teach us, and Srila Prabhupada has taught us, that if you follow the regular principles, no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication, no meat eating, avoid sinful activity, these are the pillars of sinful activity, you are not depriving yourself of happiness, you're actually opening the doors of happiness, and you're actually stopping the victimization or the harassment of the material energy. So but that's just the beginning, to stop the harassment and the victimization of the material energy. That is just the beginning. But without taking to bhakti and getting a taste from devotional life, it is not possible to stay on that platform of trying to somehow avoid sense gratification unless one gets a spiritual taste. You have to get happiness from somewhere. If you're not getting happiness on the spiritual platform, you'll be forced to look for happiness somewhere, because it is the very nature of the living entity to try and find happiness. That's the very nature of the living entity. So the Mayavadis, they make the mistake, of course, in the impersonalists, that trying to find happiness in the material world, that causes victimization by the material energy, causes so much suffering, so much problem, therefore give up searching for happiness. That's what they do. But the spirit soul has the same qualities as Krishna, sat, chit, and anda. They're pleasure seeking by nature, and therefore when we find that higher taste, then automatically the senses and the mind. Sense objects don't enter into the mind, material sense objects don't enter the mind, because one's mind is filled with the happiness of spiritual life. So, therefore, devotees, they're advised, you take Krishna prasadam. So, the sense gratification of just allowing the tongue to eat something just for pleasure, that will cause diseases, so many difficulties. And one may even take, an animal form of life as a result of what one is eating. But no one, you don't have to stop trying to be happy by eating. Krishna is so kind, he says, you eat Krishna prasad. Have some pakora, have some khichdi, nice chutney, all offered to the Lord. Because, even prasadam, we shouldn't just eat for sense gratification. But as Prabhupada says, still it is better, even if you're eating prasadam just because you like the taste, you're still advised, yes, do that. Because if you don't do that, you'll be eating in restaurants all sorts of nasty sort of foods. So it may not be the best that, you're eating prasadam, just it's so yummy, I can't stop eating. It's so nice. Give me more halva, more sweet rice. And it's more Puri. I am so full, I don't think I'll be able to stand up. But give me more. So, you know, Krishna is so kind like that. And Prabhupada says, you know, it's you know, you shouldn't even really approach Prasadam like that. You're just trying to enjoy. But still, you're better to do that. That's still good. That's where he said. He said it's not the best, but it's still good. Because you're happy on the spiritual platform. Your happiness is, you know, going towards Krishna, not away from him. So there are, you know, there are many activities like that in devotional service to make friendships. You know, make friends with devotees. Well, they have to make a friend with every devotee. That would depend upon a devotee's level of Krishna consciousness. A devotee who's very Krishna conscious, they're naturally, you know, very friendly to everyone, and everyone is friendly to them because there's no trace of sense gratification. But it's, even in devotees, if there's a little trace of, you know, personal sense gratification, it'll rub off. You'll offend someone, you'll upset somebody. You can guarantee it. But, you know, the more elevated one becomes in Krishna consciousness, and there's no sense gratification, there's no envy, you know, generally, unless someone is crazy, they make friends with everyone. So many friends. But it is limited. So, you know, but those friendships, you know, they're the source of great pleasure. And one may just, in one sense, just like prasadam, just, you know, making those friendships because they make one really happy. It may not be the first class method of associating. But still, you're better to do that than to make friendships with people who are going to, you know, fill your mind, agitate the mind with thoughts of sense gratification, cause you so much trouble. Dancing. You know, devotees come to the temple, and we dance. Sometimes we go completely crazy with kirtan. You know, I know with my spiritual master, Indrajunda Swami, that we used to have padayatra, and we'd go around New Zealand. One year we'd go around the North Island, next year we'd go around the South Island. Maybe, you know, you'd start off with a couple of dozen devotees and gradually end up with a couple of hundred, you know, people just, you know. And you'd go to a big town, hire a hall, do book distribution, give out flyers, you know, advertise, and then you'd stay there for a couple of days and you'd have a massive big festival. And you get about 300, maybe 500 people, and they come. And they'd be just, you know, these are people, you know, little grannies, and, you know, they'd be junkies, and they'd be kids, they'd be, you know, people from different nationalities who normally, you know, hate each other. There'd be people who'd never ever talk to each other. And then there's kirtan, and they're all holding hands and dancing, you know, for an hour, embracing, laughing, joking. And then you go to the next town and you do the same thing. You just go all around the island, take about a month, and then when you get back, a big rathayatra. So literally you dance all around the island and you dance with all the people. So again, You know, the motive may be pure, the motive may not be pure, but if you're not dancing there somehow or another, either pure or impure, where are you going to be? You'd be, you know, in a tight pair of jeans or, you know, what have you, in some nightclub, you know, doing some ridiculous dance, intoxicated, dangerous situation, associating with so many rascals. You know, I think the statistic is 1 in 3 women who go out have experienced having date rape drugs popped into the drink. It's about 1 in 3. But, you know, and they have no conception of, you know, what happened that night. Or that, somehow they, you know, woke up, you know, lying in the park somewhere. Don't know how they got there, or they got home, or woke up at someone else. You know, horrible, horrible situation. And but you know, dancing, you know, dance for Krishna. What a way to go through life. You know, what a wonderful way, you know, to go through life, dancing. I know with you see some of the children, I know my children, they've always, you know, danced. And sometimes we go to you know, some of the relatives' houses or some friends, and someone will put on some music and they'll just start dancing, you know, and just, you know, and the people are looking at them like they're dancing, you know, as if, how unusual, you know. Boy, you know, it's just, and it just strikes them, it's just, you know, that's just a really natural thing to do, isn't it? But I've forgotten about dancing. You know, a lot of people, you know, because once they, you know, had a few bad experiences and worked out how much money they're wasting in the nightclubs, and they've given that up and realised the sort of terrible association, you know, people go, some women go to, you know, nightclubs, and men also, to find a partner. And the saying is, you find them in the pub, you lose them in the pub. You pick them up in the pub, but then you form a relationship. Next thing you know, they're back down the pub again. And your relationship's finished. What are you doing? So, but people, you know, sometimes, and then with work and, you know, so many responsibilities, you know, people go through a whole day without dancing. A whole week. Years. A decade. People will go 20 years and not dance. You know, we have that opportunity. Spend your whole life. Just dance your whole life. Dance your way back to Godhead. So, you know, if you're dancing, you're eating prasad, and, you know, the Krishna conscious literature, you know, these literatures are just filled with so many, you know, wonderful stories. There's so much nice philosophy, and you know, when you have Prabhupada's very expert wit, in, you know, especially in the books, of course, Srila Prabhupada was very, you know, we tend to think of Srila Prabhupada as, you know, what the acharyas have said, you know, he will present that exactly. which is exactly what he did, of course. But what you gradually pick up as well is Prabhupada's own personality. And Prabhupada, of course, is a resident from the spiritual world. You know, he's used to dealing with Lord Krishna and Radharani and the cowherd boys and the cowherd girls. You know, that is their, you know, his usual conversations and reciprocations. So he's very, very, very quick and very funny. And just so many, you know, before you've even had your thought, let alone get half a sentence out, he even knows what you're going to say. So predictable. It's like with a child, you know. But children, you know, you have a fair idea what they're going to say, what they're going to do like that. Because, you know, or, you know, if you've a person who's a teacher and they've taught a subject for many, many years, you know, they know what the students, you know, what they're going to do, what they're going to say, what they may be thinking, what their responses are. So Srila Prabhupada is very, very quick, you know, just miles ahead, you know, centuries ahead. So some, you see that to some degree in his purports, as well as presenting exactly what the acharyas are saying. You also see this wonderful personality of Srila Prabhupada, just, you know, just this resident of the spiritual world, just, you know, every now and then, just revealing this wonderful mind. And, so that is there, and that's very relishable. Just like people read a good book and they, you know, they appreciate the author. And, so as well as, you know, getting the Srimad Bhagavatam as it is, which is already just nectarian because it's presented by Sukadeva Goswami in his translations. And you have this nectar, you know, to be able to associate. And Prabhupada said, if you read these books, you are associating with me. So that's another nectar. You know, every devotee has that desire that, you know, even, you know, the disciples of Srila Prabhupada, a few, you know, had a bit of association. They travelled with him different places. Some got a glance and they treasure that, you know. Boy, if I could have got two glances. You know. But that, you know, that association. And Prabhupada said, associate with me whenever you want. I'm on page 37, I'm on page 38. You know. Very, you know, so we can associate. And you read the books of the Goswamis, and Prabhupada said, you're associating. What's more, and Prabhupada said, if you actually follow those instructions, then you're actually serving their lotus feet. So you're associating and you're getting the opportunity to do some service. You know, sometimes people ask the question, especially some of the devotees, you know, sort of around somewhere in the 70s, and people say, did you ever meet Srila Prabhupada? And, you know, like myself, I get that, asked that a lot, because I joined in 78. Prabhupada left in 77. But I always find it difficult to answer, because I think, you know, yeah, this morning, you know, I went to Srimad Bhagavatam class, or, you know, yeah, I read a page of the Bhagavad Gita, yes. Didn't you? Like, you know, what's happening? But, of course, in another sense, yeah, but Prabhupada said that, you know, of the association, there's the Vapu and the Vani. The Vapu is, you know, that personal association which is very rare. And the vani is, you know, associate by remembering and following the instructions. That is the most important. And they're the same. There's no difference. There's no difference. So, because there's no difference because the reciprocation is there. The same with Krishna. You know, when you associate with Krishna, people may see the deity as a stone or metal. But the devotees don't see like that. They know that that is Krishna there. Why? Because he reciprocates every day, every moment with the devotees as a person would. And because that reciprocation is there, it is very, very nectarian and very, very sweet. So, and that reciprocation coming from all the acharyas, from our own spiritual master and from our friends, you know, it is full of love. You know, who wants a relationship in this world based on lust and envy and competition when you can enjoy these relationships based on love, you know, with the Supreme Lord and the acharyas and the devotees? So, you know, everything is there. There's feasting, there's dancing, there is love, there's the beautiful smell of incense everywhere, flowers, everything nicely painted, everything clean, everything fresh. And at the end, and no victimization by the material energy, and at the end, you go back to the spiritual world. Therefore, for a devotee, you know, for the objects of the senses to come into their mind, it doesn't bother them, because all the objects of the senses that come into the mind of the devotee that give them unlimited happiness are in relationship with Krishna. Let them come. Let the objects of the senses flood the mind, flood the senses. More prasada, more dancing, more association. There's no problem. But if there's no relationship with Krishna, then you want to stop those objects. But that can't be done. So, here, so, you know, we should ask these questions until we're satisfied, until all our doubts are gone, and we're satisfied with the answer, and we should then be very firmly fixed in devotional service to Krishna. So does anyone have any comments or questions? Well, as described in the Ishapanishad, if we all have an allotment given to us by the Supreme Lord for our so that we're satisfied, and if we when we think in terms of a God-centered society. People are satisfied to accept the allotment because they can see their relationship with the Supreme Personality of God. When there's no relationship with the Supreme Personality of God, in thinking that everything belongs to Him, so as He allots, I accept, because that's God's order and it is His property. People who don't recognize God, therefore don't see things as God's property and see that, then why shouldn't it be mine? So therefore they naturally take more than their allotment. And as soon as you take more in your allotment, you're actually encroaching upon the allotment of someone else. So therefore, it causes suffering. We see that, for instance, you know, with marriage. Marriage is a good example, that the Supreme Lord will arrange a marriage partner, you know, for some who are to be married. And one should accept that as the allotment given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one sees other, you know, men or women and wants to, you know, enjoy them, which is, you know, the allotment of someone else, then we see there is, you know, destroys families because people have illicit relationships, which breaks up families. People have relationships with someone, and you know, children, you know, are born or conceived, and then because it is not a proper relationship, then they will want to, you know, kill that child. So, you know, that, so you know, in so many different ways, as soon as you see that there is some sense gratification, which means thinking in terms of my pleasure and not what pleases the Lord, we immediately begin encroaching on others' rights and others' property. So that's the Ishapanishad teaches that, you know, God-centered society prevents that, because we see everything in relationship with God. And Prabhupada, you know, would quite often, you know, cite with the Indian population, you know, to almost recent history, just how they would accept their allotment in life. This, you know, concept of, you know, economic development to just keep increasing wealth wasn't really there. You know, they would, you know, quite happy that if they earned a certain amount, which wasn't very much, and that was the arrangement that was there, but it allowed their family to eat. They had some sort of a house, you know, and they were able to spend huge amounts of time, you know, like living life in a God-centered way, of course, then they were quite happy to do that. You know, they were quite happy just to accept their lot in life. And but, you know, that is diminishing. You know, now people, they won't accept their lot. They'll just, you know, want to keep increasing unnecessarily. The result is, for instance, another example is that Krishna wanted us to live simply and have huge amounts of time for asking questions and getting the answers and then practicing that, so that we can ultimately go back to the spiritual world rather than becoming, you know, absorbed in material life. Now, because people don't want to live simply, they want to enjoy sense gratification more than the simple life offers, therefore we've created big cities to facilitate a lot of sense gratification, right? And if we look at those big cities, how many people suffer as a result? You know, cars, trucks, you know, as I began in the beginning, Literally, there's probably, you know, maybe a couple of hundred people in this world who are enjoying massive, massive amounts of wealth. And they keep everyone else working so hard that they can never question. They've literally got no time to question their existence or why they're doing. And they place carrots, you know, here, you've got, you know, the car for 2009, but look at 2010, so keep working. There's a new car coming, but keep working. Alright? And then, you know, so you work with, ooh, we've got 2010. You've got 2010 car, don't stop working yet. Have you seen 2011?
No.
No. You know, television. You've got your little black and white, and you've got colour, and you've got this, you've got plasma, and you've got this, that, that. You know, your whole house becomes one wall, becomes one. So, in this way, people are working so hard. If you ask the average person, you know, about their work, they have to work so hard. They have no time. No time at all. They don't have time for the family that they're working for. Prabhupada tells a story of, you know, there's one little boy that, you know, one day he stayed up a little late. He got up a little earlier than usual. And he said to his mum, "Who is that man going out the door?" She says, "Oh, that's your father." Because the father would leave early in the morning for work before the child got up, come home late. So you see, who's that man? People are working so hard, the anxiety. You know that the rate of suicide, if you go to most of the bridges, schools, anywhere there's something high you can jump off, you can guarantee they've got, you know, wires and cages and all sorts of things to stop people jumping to their death because they're in so much anxiety. Because, you know, life is so stressful. Why are they so stressed? Why are people, you know, flocking to kill themselves? Because they're so stressed. They're suffering so much that life has no taste at all. It is just suffering. And why is it? So that a few people can enjoy sense gratification. So that they can enjoy sense gratification, everyone in this world has to work like a dog, like an ass, so that they can have billions of dollars. So, oh, there's a stamp I haven't got. I'll pay $3 million for that. It'd be lovely. You know. Or there's Michael Jackson's glove with sequins. Or I'll pay, you know, $500,000 for that. There's Donald Bradman's hat that he played cricket in. That's worth $1 million. You know, one time a relative of someone. They came over to stay at our house. And he's an electrician. And he brought his kids over to see the Kiss concert. So, he went. It cost him like about $1,000 to take his family. And he loved it so much, he wanted to take his family again the next night. And he said to me, he said, "I'm doing a job for this little old lady in Tassie." He come from Tassie. "I'll just whack it on the bill." And he took his whole family again for a second night. And this little pensioner in Tasmania paid for that sense gratification. How much do you think she'll struggle? For a year, a pensioner, if they lose $100, that's a month, 2 months. Sense gratification. People are working like dogs and asses, and no time for Krishna consciousness. I was saying this morning, but actually people don't want to work. That in the spiritual world, no one works. They're all lazy. That's a fact. I was telling you this morning, I was listening to a tape, and Prabhupada said that Krishna is the most lazy person. Prabhupada. Because, and he is explaining, in the material world, to be lazy is a very bad thing on any level. But in the spiritual world, it's a wonderful thing. And therefore, Krishna is the most lazy. It is natural. No one wants to work like a dog. You know, everyone wants to dance. Let's all go to the Hare Krishna temple. And, you know, the only reason more people don't come is because they're at work. Otherwise, let's go to the Hare Krishna temple. We'll dance and, you know, feast and have prasad and associate, have fun, read books. So, but, you know, those who want sense gratification, they're going to do everything within their power, just like the English. They went to India, and when they saw, here's this advanced culture, they did everything in their power to destroy it. And that was actually a policy, to destroy, you know, that culture, that Hindu culture. Prabhupada describes it, they actually, the British, you know, paid for the services of Darwin to come up with the theory of evolution to, you know, which he stole from the Vedas, twisted it around in order to, you know, destroy the Vedic conception, proper conception of evolution. Dr. Chandra Bose, I think his name was, who invented the radio. The British, again, got the help of, I think it was Marconi, to steal that, because he spoke with Chandra Bose and then went back and then, oh, I've discovered the radio. It was an Indian discovery. But they did not want the Indians to discover or be superior at anything. People who want sense gratification will go out of their way to destroy any opportunity for people to look at the Vedas as something, as here is a source of knowledge. And they'll do everything they possibly can. That's what I was saying. Nothing makes sense in this world except the fact that if you see that whatever is going on, whether it be science, religion, you know, politics, education, it is going on because someone's sense gratification is being favoured by this policy. That makes sense. Otherwise, why would you do that? So therefore, you know, as soon as there's sense gratification, people have to suffer, and that's just a practical fact. I could go on for my time's up. Any other comments or questions? Quickly. Yeah.
Question. Krishna says that the non-Chinese
engage in unbeneficial, horrible works meant to destroy the world. Ubu-kama.
So is that Krishna's desire that they destroy the world, considering
that this is also necessary? Yeah, they just, Krishna's desire, they can destroy themselves. Ultimately, they become the demoniac people who reject the Supreme Lord. Yes, they are punished in the same way that, you know, a criminal must be punished. It is the government's policy that yes, they must suffer. If a criminal doesn't suffer, how can they live freely? You know, how can they have a conscience? They must suffer. Yes, that is the government's desire, that some people must suffer. In a hospital, the doctors, you know, ask that some people fast. You see a sign on the bed, no food for this one, no food or water. That person must suffer in order to be cured. It is to bring them to the point of happiness that they must temporarily suffer. So yes,
But the suffering is for them, not the devotees. That just like they asked Srila Prabhupada, you know, what will happen if there's a war? What will we do? He said, you chant Hare Krishna and eat food prasadam. That's our only business. Yeah, the more people become rebellious against God, the more they will suffer, and they will take birth in the bodies of animals for millions and millions and millions and millions of years. So, you know, Krishna trying to rectify them. You've come to the human form. If you get a little bit of suffering in the human form, some reactions to your sinful activities, you may be able to rectify yourself while you're in the human form and actually, you know, even go back to Godhead. But if you miss this opportunity, like, there's a little suffering, but if you miss this, you know, there'll be millions and millions of years of suffering, and then there's nothing you can do. You just got to go through it. So Krishna will sometimes mercifully, you know, try and rectify with some punishment. That is the mercy, actually, of the material energy. You come to the human form of life. If she can somehow correct you while you're a human so that you come to your senses and take up devotional service, then you've saved yourself millions and millions of years of suffering. So it's mercy. It's a great benefit. Hi, all good, Srila Prabhupada.